Hello and welcome to Civility and Solutions, a podcast brought to you by your Court Services section of the Supreme Court of Ohio. I am your host, longtime justice enthusiast, Kate Munger. This is a podcast about inspirational ideas for courts from across our 88 beautiful Ohio counties. Today's topic relates to child protection mediation. We'll talk about how mediation can help in various stages of child welfare cases, from pre-adjudication through permanent custody. We'll find out what is involved in starting or expanding a child protection mediation program, as well as new resources and trends. The views expressed by guests to this podcast don't necessarily express the views of the Supreme Court. We are happy to be able to use this platform to share solutions and challenges with courts and any listeners who want to stay on the cutting edge of dispute resolution and court services issues. Welcome to Season 1, Episode 11. Our topic is Child Protection Mediation for Case Resolution and Family Engagement. Joining me today are three people who knew about child protection mediation before it was cool: Judge Denise McCauley, Heather Furnier Esquire, and Shelby Cully Esquire. Thank you all so much for being here today.
Grateful to join you.
Thank you for having us.
Nice to be here.
Thank you. Judge McCauley is a recent recipient of the Stand Up for Children Award presented by the Henry County Job and Family Services to mark their Child Abuse Prevention Month. And Judge McCauley, you have been the judge of the Henry County Family Court since 2005. What kind of cases are included in the family court umbrella?
Well, we obviously have all the juvenile type of cases, a delinquency, unruly child, abuse, neglect, dependency cases. We have the parentage cases, and then we have divorce, annulment, dissolution of marriage, and all the post cases in these cases too.
You guys do it all there. Yeah. You guys have everything. What is your favorite part about being a family court judge?
Well, it's always interesting. There's really never a dull day. And just when you think you've heard everything, you hear a new type of case and something different that you've never thought about before. It's challenging. And I also think in the long run, it's very satisfying because you feel like you really can help families and children and improve their lives as best as you're able to.
And okay, but the coolest part of being a judge has to be that you can swear people in when they're elected to political office. And who are you most excited to swear in?
Oh, geez. Well, I just swore somebody in last week, a new judge, Karen Gallagher in Williams County, and she is the juvenile probate judge there, and was very excited because it's the first female judge in Williams County, Ohio, which is the very northwest corner. And she asked me to do that. So I was very honored to swear her in.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I note that you didn't say your son, who is Ohio State.
Well, I did swear him in also in January. So I've been swearing a lot recently.
There's a lot of swearing, folks.
Yes, I've sworn my son in 3 times.
Aww.
Twice in the House. I take it back, maybe 4. Twice in the House and twice now in the Senate. So
cool.
That's very exciting too. Yeah.
Now, you have an interesting history as a mediator as well. Can you tell us about that?
Well, yeah. In 1989, I was convinced by the judge who was one of my predecessors, about 2 predecessors before me here, to attend an AFCC conference. And they talked about mediation, and he was very encouraging about that. So along with another friend, we went and took mediation training back then, the 40-hour mediation training, which was pretty much all that was available at that point in time. And then I engaged along with my legal practice in a private mediation practice until I became magistrate in 1996.
Very good. So next I'd like to say hello to Heather Furnier. Heather is Chief Deputy Clerk at the Lucas County Family Court. How are things going down at the court? Has it been a challenging year with COVID this year?
Today, the challenge has been the snow because we have about 12 inches here. So we've been trying to shovel out. But yes, it's been very interesting. What's that quote? Change is the only constant in life. So it's kind of what we're living right now.
Now, you've served in other capacities in Lucas County, correct? As yes. mediation director and trainer of the court-appointed special advocate program.
Yes.
And one occupation that you've had that I wanted to highlight as well is you spent your time as a family law attorney representing children and parents in juvenile domestic courts, appellate court too. Do you think that that experience adds to your perspective on child protection mediation?
Absolutely. Actually, when I was thinking about this podcast this morning, I started to think back on when I was representing parents for dependency, neglect, and abuse cases, because our court, and especially Judge Denise Cubbin, she's done a fantastic job of really making sure that mediation is something that is always available. And so when we had the DNA cases, many of them were mediated, some by Shelby, some by other people that I work with now in different capacities, but being there to participate on behalf of a parent is different than being there as a guardian ad litem or the mediator. So it was a great opportunity to see how those mediations go forward, what works, what maybe doesn't work as well. But it was a wonderful opportunity. So yes, it was great. And it gave me a really good perspective for mediation.
All right. And I want our listeners to know who they're dealing with here. Heather spent about a week in 2020 hiking the Appalachian Trail. So she's a tough cookie. What sparked your interest in doing that?
The hiking, I just love hiking. It's my passion. I love doing it. So my husband and I went out there and we did about 52 miles and I would be right back there in a heartbeat if I could. It was fantastic.
Wow.
So, just a gorgeous area. Lots of fun. I can't stop reading books about hiking. I just love it.
Oh my gosh. So good for social distancing this year too.
It really was. Yeah. Nobody else out there.
All right. And I would like to introduce our third guest today. Shelby Cully is the chief counsel for Lucas County Children's Services. And Toledo is my hometown, and I love having these folks from Toledo on the podcast. I hope you got some authentic punchki this week before Lent. I miss it. Shelby, has the pandemic had an impact on child welfare in Lucas County this year? What were your concerns?
Absolutely. We knew from day one that the pandemic was going to have an effect on child welfare. Once everything was shut down and children were taken out of schools, we knew that we'd have a decrease in the mandatory reporting of child abuse and neglect, and sure enough, that did occur. However, we know that child abuse and neglect does not decrease just because people are not reporting it. So yes, unfortunately, the pandemic has affected that, as well as an increase in domestic violence that children are witnessing.
And you've served in so many roles in children's services, being attorney for the parents, attorney for children, guardian ad litem, child protection mediator. What draws you to this field that has so much, there's so much stress, there's so much going on with it, so much that you have to hear about these stories?
Like a lot of other people who are drawn to social services and child protection, history, my childhood had some connection with child protection and some of the very issues that a lot of the other families are dealing with. And although in law school, I thought, no, I'm going to stay away from family law and I'm going to go into bankruptcy and I'm going to go into corporate law. Something else pushed me towards family law. And as soon as I got into it, I was hooked and I have stayed ever since. Not straying at all to the other courts. So it's definitely my passion now is juvenile law, child protection law specifically.
All right, thank you. All right, so you are all set to present about child protection mediation at the 2020 Dispute Resolution Conference that was unfortunately canceled, like everything else in our lives due to the pandemic. Are you guys ready to dive into that topic on our podcast platform today?
Sure. Not only were we ready to present last year, but Heather and I were halfway to the conference when we realized that the whole world shut down. So that's kind of our last time together was the day that the world shut down.
Oh my
and
God.
We had to turn around and come back.
Well, I'm glad we got to rejoin for this today because there was work put into it. Happy we get to talk about this. And it's so important. Child protection mediation is like so hot right now. Everyone is talking about this and I'm very excited for it. So let's dig right in. Judge McCauley, for those listeners unfamiliar with this area of law, what are we talking about when we're talking about child protection cases? How do these cases get initiated? What kind of cases are these?
These are essentially cases that in which a parent's alleged to be, a parent is the parent of a child who's alleged to be abused, neglected, or dependent. At least this is how we see them. They may start before that in children's services. And in those cases, sometimes the agency's dealing with a family for a long, sometimes a relatively long period of time before we actually see them in court. But as far as when we see them, they are children who are alleged to have been abused, neglected, or dependent.
And what's an example of a dependency case? What does that word mean? Or what kind of cases are those?
Well, I should have gotten out my revised code so I can.
No, just like a vernacular.
Essentially, these are cases in which, I don't want to say they don't rise to the level of an abuse or a neglect, but the parents are not able to, for whatever reason, perform the necessary duties that a parent would do, that they are not fulfilling those duties. They're not there for their children. Perhaps they're incapacitated or they can't do it because of that reason. It's not that they're purposeful necessarily in causing this child to perhaps suffer from neglect or suffer from maybe even a sort of an abuse situation, but the parents aren't in that position of doing this purposefully is generally what I would look at with the dependency case.
And those can even include children maybe that just need extra resources from the state that maybe the parents just, you know, you can't provide
because of
the child's own mental health or condition.
That's correct. And we have many kids, unfortunately, where perhaps they come to us because they're delinquent initially. And when we delve into the case, it would appear that really this is more like a dependency case, that things are going on in the family where the parents aren't able to properly care for the child or the child's special needs or behaviors.
Do you think that there's any misconceptions out there about child protection cases?
Well, one thing that we always talk about is, you know, many cases come in and they're alleged to be neglected or they're alleged to be abused children. And the parents want this to be switched to dependency because it doesn't sound as bad. As far as how we treat these cases, it's exactly the same. We don't do anything different for a dependency case than we would a neglect or an abuse case. I also think that many parents feel that it's terrible to have to work with children's services. They look at them as being the enemy. They appear to believe that this is more like a criminal case, that someone's finding them guilty, and that certainly does not happen in abuse neglect dependency cases. It's a status for the child, not a conviction for the parents by any means. And those are things that parents generally don't understand, I think, going into a case.
Yeah. And that everybody on the team is supposed to work for a reunification to get the kid back with the parent.
That's exactly correct. And we spend a lot of time talking with parents about that this is the goal. This is what we're working for. You know, some parents will come in and say, I know they get paid more at Children's Services if they get more of these cases, which is absolutely not true. They feel that this is, you know, that somebody's notching something, a notch on their belt to be able to get another case. And that's not true at all either. We work very hard to get these children back with their parents. And if not with their parents, at least with someone who's related to them or perhaps is a family friend.
And I remember working in these kind of cases for everyone at court. It was the proudest day when a parent did get reunified with a child, that was the success. We were all patting everyone on the back, including the parent, including the caseworker, everybody who worked with that family to get that family back together.
That's certainly true. And we, as Lucas County does too, we have a dependency treatment court. And boy, when somebody gets their children back and we close the case, we're having a party. So it's It's a great thing. It's a great day.
Heather, Lucas County has a child protection mediation program. Can you tell us about that and what are the goals of that program?
Sure. So the program was started years ago. And at this point right now, when either the judges feels like it's appropriate for mediation to go forward, they'll refer the case to our mediation department. And then what happens is we reach out to the parties, get a time that's set up, and schedule it and get it mediated. Over the years, we've had a number of mediators in our program who've gone through all of the different classes and got up to speed on being able to do the child protection courses. And so we talk a lot about how we set up the room, how we want to seat people, whether or not we want to use a co-mediator while we're there. And the conversation these days, should it be in person or should it be virtual? What are the pros and cons of all of that? We're doing our mediations, and whenever the judge wants to refer one down, we get that scheduled and mediated. So,
how long have you had that program?
I think we've had this program at least since I've been around, and I started in 2002. I believe it was before that. So in the 1990s, it started.
Okay.
Quite some time.
That's great. And Shelby, have you been involved personally in a child protection mediation in Lucas County in your role as an attorney?
I have been involved in many child protection mediations in various different roles, starting out as both guardian ad litem and parent's attorney, representing parents who were involved in cases of child abuse, neglect, and dependency. And then as a child protection mediator, and finally as a staff attorney for Lucas County Children's Services. So I've kind of been around the table in various different roles. So it really has opened up my perspective as far as what's the value in the different roles and how can each person at that table contribute to a better outcome for that family.
Let's talk more about that. Can you describe how child protection mediation looks like when you're participating in it? How does it function? How does it work?
So in Lucas County, the goal is, like I said, a better outcome for this family. And depending on what stage you are at in the case, it'll look a little different. When you're at the mediation because you're trying to determine the outcome for the adjudication and or the disposition, it's going to look a little different than when you're there because you are looking at a different disposition further down the road. So when you're looking at a permanent custody disposition or a legal custody disposition, they're going to look a little different. But essentially, starting with the adjudication, all the parents and their attorneys are going to be in the room along with the staff attorney for the agency and their caseworkers. And that could be, depending on the county, one caseworker or multiple caseworkers. So here in Lucas County, it includes your assessment worker, as well as the worker who's going to be assigned as the ongoing worker. And that's important because it gives the ongoing worker an opportunity to work with the family a little bit more on that case plan than they would otherwise have, because that case plan is due so quickly. It gives them a chance to talk to the parents about the case plan and what makes sense for their family, what's the best services to put in there, how to make sure they're not overwhelming the family, but how to not miss a service and how to include the other parts of the family on that. You're also going to have the guardian ad litem in there who will have an opportunity to hear everybody at the same time, including the potential relative placements and the parents, and get a better understanding what's in the best interest of the children by their participation in it. And you'll have either one or two mediators as well. So it's going to be a packed room. And thankfully, we have skilled mediators who give everybody an opportunity to be heard during that mediation. So that's how it varies from a traditional trial, is everyone gets a chance to talk. Everyone gets a chance to say what's important to them to have as an outcome for that mediation. Attorneys, it's usually the important outcome is this child dependent, neglected, or abused? But for the parents, it's usually, when do I get to see my child? What do I need to do to reunify with my child? So you're going to get a lot of different outcomes from this mediation other than just that court adjudication and case plan. You're going to get answers. A relative could want to know, how am I going to get this child to and from school? Do I get daycare assistance? How about food, extra food that's going to be needed? So there's a lot of things that you could talk about in that mediation that you're not going to get when you just do a trial.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you only have so much time at trial in front of the judge. And these are a lot of issues that maybe wouldn't be extremely important to the court, but for a family who's trying to function and just get through life and make sure this child has what it needs, he or she needs, on a daily basis, then these are the kind of questions you can even address in mediation, that these seemingly, you know, doesn't go to, did we prove this case? Did I win this trial? But for the people involved, these things couldn't be more important, especially for the kid. Heather, is there anything else that you would add to that? What are some of the successes you've seen with this mediation program?
I would just add that I do think it is important to think about the mediation from the different roles that Shelby was describing. It is interesting to me when you sit down and you are, for instance, like if you're talking to the attorneys, you would think that an attorney's role is to advocate for your client, and absolutely it is. But when you sit down at mediation, that can look a little bit different. Oftentimes we'll engage the attorneys and say, well, today we're talking about, like if it's a permanent custody, today we're talking about permanent custody. That's a big word. What does it mean? Attorneys in the room, can you give me just a nuts and bolts? What does that mean? Give me a definition of that so we can talk about it. And so you get a chance to take those words that are really big. What's a case plan? Mental health, your mental health, what do you have to do for that? Oh, I have to go and I have to meet with a counselor. Well, how are you going to get to that counselor? Do you have bus tokens? Are you walking? Do you already have a relationship with somebody else started? Did the caseworker know about that? So it's a chance to really kind of get back into the weeds and to sort through some of those things. So you get to break down the words, you get to break down what everything means. You get to also look at your perspectives differently. If you're a guardian ad litem and you're going into a mediation and you're saying, I just want what's best for this child, and you don't get a chance to listen to grandma say, mom on this case was in foster care when she was younger. And so now she's having a hard time with doing a case plan because she's still struggling with what it was like for her and why does it have to be different for her child? So you hear that perspective and a guardian ad litem might start to say, oh, okay, this parent was raised differently than I was. Maybe I need to change my paradigm. And caseworkers too get a chance to talk through the struggles that a parent has when they're creating a case plan, because it's easy to say, I want you to go to ZEF Center. I want you to get a house. I want you to do those things. But if you don't recognize that ZEF Center is for mental health 10 miles away, but another place is 1 mile away, you just don't know. So mediation is a great chance to sort it out, to talk it through. It's more like a kitchen table conversation than a bench conversation. So it really is a wonderful opportunity and it can be used in so many ways. We talked a little bit about, or a judge talked a little bit about the different specialty courts. In our court, if you're sitting down at a adjudication mediation and the parent is talking about struggling with dependency due to drugs or alcohol and they really want to engage in our drug court, that's an opportunity for us to have somebody at the table who says, yes, I'm part of drug court. Can I tell you a little bit about it? And that gives the parent time to say, wait a second, I've heard about this. What do you mean I can be held in contempt? What does that really mean? Does that mean I'm going to jail if I relapse? And it gives the conversation a chance to evolve and say, look, we understand that if you are drug addicted, that relapse is part of your recovery. Not that we're encouraging it, but we understand it. We want to walk you through it. We want to talk to you about those ramifications of your behaviors. And so the person can say, oh, now I kind of have an idea of what that looks like. So maybe I want to enroll in that. or maybe you have a young parent with a young child and they want to learn more about parenting. So maybe they want to do healthy babies court. And so there's that specialty opportunity there. So it's not only an opportunity to find, is the child dependent, neglected, or abused? Yes, we can check that off the list. We can get that done for the Supreme Court reporting from a clerk's perspective. But it's more about, do the parents understand why they're there? And do they have a real roadmap that they understand, that they can read, that they can navigate so they know, okay, I know I'm here now and I don't want to be. How do I get out of here? Okay, I got to do those things. That's how I do it. And you are my people. You're the ones I reach out to, and my email and my text. So it's a plan, and it's a way to develop it so they know how to move forward and how to reunite with their children. Because the last thing you want to do is to be sitting at a permanent custody and a parent to say, well, I had no idea. I didn't know what happened. What's a case plan? What's going on? If you have that mediation at the very outset and you set the tone and you start that conversation, you say, we're all here, we're your team, here's the plan. It just gives you good footing for the case to go forward and to have traction and people to understand what they're doing.
It puts that parent on the team too, to help make those decisions or feel like they're part of that conversation and people are going to listen to them because they have to. It's part of the mediation, is everyone gets a chance to talk, like you said.
Absolutely. They're the number one player, VIP.
VIP. Judge McCauley, your court in Henry County also uses child protection mediation. Can you tell us about the child protection mediation program there?
Well, we've been, I called Dick Alton this morning because I wanted to make sure before he said, because he was our first mediator in our court. And yeah, we started in 1998. So we've had it for 23 years, I guess, at this point in time. And that was before you had specific training in mediation. We all went to that when that became available, mediation and dependency cases. But we primarily used it in permanent custody cases or case planning cases after the initial case plan. We would like to use it before that, and we've talked about it many times. The problem with our mediation program is that we serve, I think right now he's serving 6 different counties, our mediator, who runs all over the place, as some of you may know. We do have some contract mediators who also are trained to do mediation in these particular cases, child protection cases, but they're not as available as we would like. So Kate, if you have extra money to send our way, we'd certainly take it, but we are, we do it some with case planning, not as much as we do, but I always tell people, I practiced before too, and primarily in family law, and I did a lot of cases where I was guardian ad litem or represented parents. And I always thought it was interesting when you would go to the case plan meeting, because you'd walk in the room, and I think it had to be so intimidating to parents, because the professionals are all sitting there together and they all have their coffee and they all know each other and they're chatting with one another, and the parent goes in there not knowing what's going on or how this is going to work. And it always seemed to me in the past when I was doing that, the case plan was preordained. You know, they already had everything filled out. And so it was like, you're going to go to counseling and you're going to have supervised parenting and it's going to be this many times in this place. And you're going to have the, I mean, I could have written the case plan without knowing the case, essentially. And I think that mediation has certainly allowed individuals to come in and talk about what's right for their children and what makes the most sense. And that's so very important for the parents.
And from a judge, from a court perspective, what benefits are there to using child protection mediation for these cases? Does it help your timelines? Does it help the number of appeals that you have on PC cases?
It certainly helps. First of all, it helps not having to have a trial. You know, if we've got a PC case and we don't have to have a trial, we're taking an appeal off the books, but we're also taking the time for a trial and the effort that has to go into that. And actually, in the long run, it is so much better for parents. I was trying to think back, and we don't have certainly not the number of cases they have in Lucas County. We're pretty small. But in all the time I've been doing this, I can only think of 2 cases where we've had appeals, where we've gone to a trial, and one of them was a PC and one was a custody to a relative that was the ultimate upshot of the case, that they ultimately resulted in an appeal. So it has really reduced those. You know, we it has been great. And I think the parents are much more satisfied with it. And even in a PC case, generally the agreement is that there will be some ongoing contact, although obviously not enforceable under Ohio law, but, or there will just be some communication, perhaps once a year, something's going to go back and forth. So this parent's going to hear about the child. And in many cases, because the foster parents have had this child for a long period of time and have gotten to know the parents, a lot of these foster parents have been agreeable to continue some sort of contact. So when the parent realizes, based upon perhaps what their attorney is telling them or what they've heard in court, that it, the outcome isn't going to be perhaps what they want. And in some cases, the parents are very much realizing, I just can't take this child back. You know, I don't have the facility, I don't have the ability, whatever it may be. And so it gives them a way to do something that they feel they're acting in their child's best interest. And I think that's a great advantage.
I think that's so interesting that you say that about permanent custody cases. And for people that are listening who are like, what's a permanent custody case? Just for a definition, permanent custody cases completely terminate a parent's parental rights. They just terminate the rights and then the child is available to be adopted. So it is, it's the end of everything. But what you're saying is that through mediation, the parent's able to talk maybe with the foster parents or with the agency and come to some kind of understanding going forward that, yes, if you agree to a permanent custody or you don't fight the permanent custody finding, that for us, it doesn't have to terminate that relationship, that we are still willing to work with you. We're not your enemy. We know you're part of this child's life. We can make an arrangement that wouldn't be possible if you just went to trial and that was the end of it. So that seems to open some doors.
I think the other advantage with these cases where we get to the point that, well, we don't need to do permanent custody. We've got a relative or we've got someone else who's willing to step in. Many times there's a lot of animosity between the parent and that person because this person has stepped in and taken the care of the child into their own hands. And sometimes with this mediation, you're able to move that along so that that animosity, that maybe that anger between them goes away and they come up with a plan that they're going to be able to work with going forward. And even though that parent may not have a lot of time with the child, there's something that's worked out that the parent can continue to have communication. The parents' rights are not terminated in those cases, although they may have limited time with the child and so forth. They still do play a part in the child's life, and it's helpful to the kinship care provider that they feel like they're not going to have this angry situation with the parent going forward.
Yeah, I love that for another opportunity to use mediation in this case. So in these cases, so you've got mediation at permanent custody, you can use mediation post-disposition, talking about placement with relatives or legal custody to relatives. And then Heather, I think you were talking about using mediation pre-adjudication to develop the roadmap going forward for the case and also to make a determination, was this child abused, neglected, dependent, to get that settled. So.
Right. We schedule sometimes there, right at the adjudication to address the case plan and adjudication right at that time.
So I'll pose this to whichever of you would like to take it, but do you recall an experience where mediation really changed the dynamics of a case as far as like parents participating or that the agency, you know, opening their mind to some ideas?
I have one that I have, given a couple of times, but it was so powerful that I feel as though it's worth repeating. I was representing the agency during this mediation, and the parents had already agreed to go to drug court. They had a long-standing drug issue, both of them, and we were doing the typical, as Judge said, kind of already written case plan where, all right, you're going to have a diagnostic assessment, you're going to go to substance abuse treatment, you're going to go and have a mental health evaluation, parenting, I mean, just the standardized treatment. And during mediation, we're going over these. And as a professional in child protection, sometimes you get a little too comfortable. You're like, okay, let's move this along. And this father kind of stopped us all. And because we were in mediation, the mediator assisted in helping that father kind of speak his truth, which was that he had been through substance abuse treatment multiple times in the past. And he said that he could teach the substance abuse treatment because he knew it and had been through it so many times that that was not going to work for him to keep him sober, that he needed a different type of accountability. And because we were in mediation and not in a trial situation, I was able to speak to him with as an attorney next to him and tell him, I understand what you're saying, but you have to understand that if we get to the end, if we only have 2 years at most to work with you, really we have a year. And if you haven't shown significant progress, we're going to make a permanent plan for your child. And what we know is that intensive outpatient treatment can help people who suffer from addiction. And he said, not me. I need this service. And he named the service that he was currently in and that was working for him. And I told him, you know, I don't know that this will work because we don't have the science behind it like we have in this other situation. Because of that mediation, the caseworker was able to hear him and his passion behind this service. And he was able to hear us and kind of the warning that we were telling him as well. And in the end, he did what he felt was best. He made that educated and informed decision. We were able to change the case plan in the mediation to allow him to do that so that he wasn't violating a court order by not attending IOP services. And in the end, he was reunified with his child within a year, which for a substance abuse case where there's a long history of substance abuse is very rare. So it was one of those party days, as the judge said, where we all got to celebrate this gentleman and his accomplishments and that this family was still together. It was amazing. Had we gone to trial, we would have just presented the case plan as drafted. His attorney would have told him, you have to agree to this. This is what they're asking for. And he would have agreed to it because that's what his attorney would have told him to do. And we would have moved forward. And at the end, we probably would have said, well, you didn't complete IOP services. Therefore, you didn't successfully complete your case plan. And therefore, you're not getting your child back. So I believe this completely changed the trajectory for this family because he was able to speak his truth and tell us IOP was not going to work for him. And we were able to tell him, well, if you're not sober, we're going to have to move forward with a permanent plan. So both sides got to inform each other what was needed to be said.
Yeah, that's a great story.
Yeah, we had one recently. It didn't necessarily have a happy ending for the parent, but it did, I think, for the child. And it reminded me of how important it was as a mediator to really listen to what a parent is saying. We had a child or a mom, and it was a permanent custody, and the child was medically fragile. And when the case started, mom was supposed to obtain housing and attend to mental health concerns and to attend doctor's appointments because the child was medically fragile. And so mom was on board for about 2 months and did okay, and then ran into a problem with her mental health, and she went into some deep depression and kind of fell off for a while. So this was a permanent custody case. So time was going and we really needed to get everything going. So by the time we're at mediation, I want to say, you know, the motion's filed and mom is now, she had not done anything for a while, but she had just come to the table and said, I'm ready to rejoin. And so while she's there, she's just fighting. And she would talk about her visits. So she would go online and research what's appropriate food for a child of this developmental age and try to feed the child. But the child was medically fragile, so the child would get sick. And so this child was just not doing well. So in the mediation, we're talking and guardian ad litem is saying, look, we just need you to progress more in your case plan. You need to learn more about feeding the child. And she'd say, I looked it up. I know it's right. It felt me appropriate for my child. Okay. And then the caseworker would say, and you need to be further along in your mental health sessions. And she'd say, I've gone and I'm ready to go right now. And at some point there was just this kind of build. And she said, I am going to fight for my child. I'm going to fight for my baby. And so we had a chance to say, what does that mean? Fight for your baby. Are you talking about physically fighting the caseworker and the guardian ad litem and fighting in court and litigation? Is that what you mean by fight? And she kind of looked at me and I said, or are you talking about fighting for the best interest of your child? Are you fighting for what you really want your child to have? And she kind of looked the other way. I said, okay, so tell me, if you could have the best for your child, what is it that you would want? And she said, what any of us would say, I want stability. I want love. I want, you know, health. I want all of those things for my child. And I said, so what's the best way to get that for your child? And she stopped. And she started to tear up, and we weren't able to go any further in that. And everybody kind of left, and we didn't have an agreement. But as Dick Altman will tell me, that doesn't always mean that it's a bad thing. So you just kind of have faith that you had all the conversations that you needed to have, that you gave mom a chance to talk, that you gave the caseworker a chance to talk. And two weeks later, I had a caseworker who came up, or an attorney who came up to me, and she said, hey, guess what? Mom agreed to permanent custody right before trial. And I think she did fight for what she wanted. She fought for the best interest for her child, but she had to work through it and have a chance to voice it and to explain what she was doing. So it really is a powerful tool when you get a chance to use it in a case. And it's great for parents to be able to show, hey, I am fighting, even if it's a way we don't necessarily understand.
Absolutely.
I can tell you about a case.
Go ahead, Judge.
We had a case, actually. It was a case in which I was guardian ad litem many, many years ago. And it was the old way we did cases. And the court took permanent custody of this child and placed them with, in a foster. There was a foster placement, and they ultimately adopted this child, who was probably about 5 or 6 at the time. And when the child got to be a teenager, she looked up her mom and wanted to reconnect. And, you know, back then we had nothing that allowed for that, no way to do it. And ultimately we ended up, Dick Altman did the mediation, and I was asked to just sit in because I had been her guardian, and she had some vague memory of me, I guess. But they ultimately worked out something where, and this was with the child, the natural mother and the foster mother. And they worked out a plan where she could continue to have some limited contact with her natural mother, but continued with the foster mother, and still to this day, because occasionally when you live where I live, you run into people. And so she still is, you know, considered the mother, the foster adoptive mother considers her child, and they still have a close relationship, but she still had that limited relationship with her adoptive mother. And that was at the child's demand after this adoption took place. And I think that demonstrated to me how important this can be in the long run for kids who are old enough, at least, to have to remember their natural parent, to have some connection with them. And as I said, she was 5 or 6 at the time, not that old, but that still was something important to her that was foreclosed at the time and isn't now, if we can work some of these things out.
And Shelby, did you want to say something?
Piggybacking on what Heather and Judge said, this process is a powerful tool for the emotional aspect of these cases. When you are doing a mediation pre-adjudication, oftentimes the parents are dealing with grief, the grief of their loss as a parent. They have failed as a parent. You were given this baby on day one and said, you know, to care for and provide the best for this parent. And if they're at a mediation in dependency, neglect, and abuse, that means they have failed. So they are in that grief process, and this mediation can help that process. And the sooner that they come to acceptance, and sometimes that's being confronted with the facts of the case through that adjudication mediation, and sometimes it's just an opportunity for the parent to emote about everything that has happened to them up to that point in time. But the sooner that they get through that into acceptance, the sooner they can start those case plan services, and the sooner they can get to reunification. if they cannot come to acceptance, oftentimes you are not going to reach the reunification. And sometimes it's the acceptance the other way than that you're working through in some of those post-disposition ones where they're coming to acceptance in a different format. So mediation is really an emotional tool as well.
All right.
Either get the parents kind of revved up and going on their case plan or help them come to terms with it if it does not go well.
So let's talk practical. Heather, for mediators who are listening to this podcast today who've maybe never considered mediating these types of cases, what do you need to do to become a child protection mediator?
So if you haven't already, you want to take four steps. The first one is the fundamentals of mediation. You want to go on to the Ohio Supreme Court, look at their training and enroll in that. And then after that one, you have the specialized family or divorce. Well, actually, it'd have to be domestic abuse issues next would be the next one that you want to take. And then the specialized family or divorce mediation training is available. And then after that, you can hopefully get a recommendation from a judge, either from a court of appeals or common pleas, municipal or county. And then hopefully then after that, you can take the child protection mediation courses.
Okay. And Judge McCauley, what would you say to a judge or a court that's thinking about starting a child protection mediation program? What are some considerations? How do you get this off the ground? What do you need?
Well, I want to say one more thing to clarify what I said before about the story, but I was not the judge when I stayed in on that mediation.
Okay.
And it wasn't in my court either. So just to clarify. But no, what you need to start a mediation program, first of all, obviously, you need to have a mediation system. Now, some courts have their own mediators that they hire. Some have contract mediators. Obviously, these folks need to be trained to do this. And then it's finding out how do you fund that. And I don't know, Kate, you might be in a better position to talk about if there's funding available for this sort of thing. As I mentioned before, we have several counties involved in our mediation program, and we fund it with sums from each one of the counties. We started with a grant back in 1998 under the 12 Court Mediation Institutionalization Project and started it then, and then we've expanded to different counties. But at this point, we're all self-funding with different funds coming from the courts to do that. And we are very pleased with mediation, and it's really become very accepted. I think about the times when we started this years ago, we did not have, I think a lot of people were saying, is this meditation, medication? What is this? What are we talking about? And so it was pretty foreign when we got this started back in 98, but it's very well accepted here in all facets. But the training, which was mentioned by Heather, is really what the most important thing for the people who are going to do this kind of mediation.
Very good. And as to the money, I cannot promise any dollars, but I know that there are federal grants such as the CIP grant, and I don't know if it would be available for any kind of things like this, but I would encourage any courts that are interested to reach out to our children and family section and see what opportunities there are. And you know, you may be able to pair, like Judge McCauley's court has, with other counties nearby to share a mediator, to share that cost and share those resources. So it may not be out of reach for even smaller counties to get started. And it could have cost savings for especially larger courts if they don't have so many PC trials. I mean, when you think about how many attorneys and court staff and court reporters are involved in those permanent custody trials that can last all day or all week, you know, that's an extreme expense for the court as well. So if mediation can take off some of that cost, that might be something to consider as well.
I think the time the court has to put in on those cases.
And absolutely.
It's not just the time sitting in court. It's writing that decision that, mm-hmm. You know, the PC decisions I've had to write there, it's almost like writing a book by the time you're done, because there's so much that needs to go into that.
Absolutely.
And correct me if I'm wrong, though, Kate, that as far as the people getting trained to be mediators through your programs, that's little or no expense,
right,
other than their time. Correct?
Yeah, it's their time, but the mediation training through the Supreme Court
for child protection mediation is a free training. So you got to get signed up, and all those prerequisite courses, we also offer those for free as well if you're affiliated with a court. Yeah. Heather, was there anything else that you would add to getting a child protection mediation program off the ground?
I would say if you're a judge and you want to do it, that's fantastic. I know that there's the new handbook that's out from the Ohio Supreme Court, and that's a great tool to use to talk about what are the steps and, you know, what information is out there. So that would be the best tool. I'd get that, snatch that up as soon as you can. And then just look at your pool of mediators. And even if you don't have mediators, look at your pool of people who are willing to listen. You know, who are the attorneys in your court who come prepared and are willing to listen, and who are patient, and who the biggest thing is, who care about the families we're working with. If someone cares about the families we're working with, and you can tell that they're willing and they're invested, those are the best people to have. They'll learn it. They'll sit. They'll listen to the parents and go from there. But yeah, there's certainly a pathway to do it. Supreme Court's got the toolkit for it. You just got to find the people. And if you've got the desire, it really is the best way to engage families, to cut your costs, to bring families in for compliance, to get things resolved quickly, to get them resolved for the least amount of money too. It's really an amazing tool.
Thank you for that plug for the Child Protection Mediation Toolkit. If anybody wants to see that, that was recently developed. It's on the Supreme Court of Ohio website in the dispute resolution section. And yes, it has forms, data, a planning guide, basically things that you would need to get a child protection mediation program off the ground. All right. Well, thank you all so much for all that information. We're coming towards the end of our podcast here. And there's a bit that I like to do at the end of every podcast, and it's called Two for Me and One for You. So there's two questions for you as presenters, and then one question that you would have for our audience to see if they were paying attention today. Now, the first question, I feel bad almost asking it to you because you've all already answered this. So if you just want to do a pass, that's fine. But the first question is, what's an interesting mediation-related story that you can share? So if you want to take a pass because you already told your story, that's okay. But otherwise, I'll leave it to you if you have something that you want to share.
I actually have a quick one from last week. I did a mediation with people, and last week was Valentine's Day. And as I was typing up the agreement, there was singing and dancing for each other on the mediation while I reminded them that I was still there. And they said, yes, you are. So that was a fun one.
Virtual mediations. Anything can happen.
It was very romantic.
That's awesome. My quick one was, and it kind of reminds you to be willing to allow some, I guess, back and forth between people, because sometimes that's needed. We had a mom and a relative caregiver, which was her sister. So two sisters in there, kind of just, they had a few years of pent up aggression, and they told each other what they felt. And in the end, they were able to come together for this child and mend all those hurt feelings. And it was a great day too. So it's okay to let them get loud.
I would say one really important thing about mediation that maybe I didn't mention before is that in many instances, Children's Services is ready to get out of the case. They're saying, okay, the kid is with grandma, things are fine. I don't think mom and dad have done what they need to do. And the one beauty of mediation is I can tell them, we're going to have mediation before you get out of this case, because I'm not just going to say, it's done, grandma's got the child. Let them work out what they're going to do with parenting time and all that once we're out of the case, because that's not likely to work really well, because they need a plan. And mediation really allows us to develop that plan, and it's something that works for them as opposed to me imposing something upon them that may or may not work going forward. And also can even sometimes set another goal for them, for this parent. You know, once this happens, then maybe we'll increase some time for you with the child or whatever it may be. And they can all set that down and do that themselves. And that has been a really wonderful addition to what we do.
Absolutely. Okay, question two. is, who is an amazing person you know related to the field of mediation or child protection, and why do you appreciate them? Heather.
I would have to say Tammy Martin Kozier was fantastic, and her passion for mediation is off the charts. And so when I got to do fundamentals with her, she kind of ignited that love of mediation for me, as well as Dick Altman. He's also passionate about it and loves it. And they're just fun to be around. They make you laugh. And they really, you know, I was just chomping at the bit. I couldn't wait to do a mediation after I sat with them. One other person who was fantastic was Zina Zumeta. She is awesome. Love listening to her teach and learning from her too. So just so many wonderful people out there. So I'm really, really excited about the Ohio Supreme Court's training program, because it's really brought lots of people around me that I've got to just sit and listen and soak up. So wonderful people.
Thanks. Shelby?
Mine's easy. It's Heather Furnier. Aww. Heather was one of my mentors when I first started practicing law. She was there for me every step of the way. So she ignited my passion and kept me into child protection law and showed me how to do it in a very respectful way. She was always well loved by all her colleagues because she was, you know, intelligent, capable, and respectful to the parents. And she taught me how to do appeals and all kinds of stuff. So, and now she is in charge of the mediation program that I love, and I know she is going to keep that going, and it's in good hands.
Aw, this is amazing. Judge McCauley?
Well, I can go back to, as I said, back in the late 80s and early 90s, the person running around Ohio at that point doing training was Robert Benjamin. Some people went up to see Zena, and other people had training here in the state with Robert Benjamin. He hasn't been around for a long time, so I'm not sure what he's up to, but he did ignite a lot of interest in mediation back then. And then, of course, Dick Altman, who I was fortunate enough to work with for years. And I'm the one that got him to take mediation training originally. So, you know, that was a good thing. I encouraged him because he certainly has the right qualifications and the right attitude and the demeanor and so forth. And last, I would say Eileen Pruitt, who was at the Supreme Court for many, many years and was a big cheerleader of mediation and really got that office up and running along, you know, back in, that was probably in the 90s also, so in early 2000s, so.
Oh, and Magistrate Altman retires this year, so we're going to miss him, but we'll have to drag him back for trainings and whatnot, I'm sure.
He says that, but you wait and see what he does. And I look for him to stay at least one more year. I could be wrong.
Good luck. He's got plans.
Yeah. He said he's retiring before, and then he changes his mind.
And then Eileen Pruitt, she contributed a lot to our Child Protection Mediation Toolkit. So I'm happy to hear her get a shout out here today too. All right. So the last question is the question from the presenters to the audience. And I believe Heather has the question for us. Can you give the audience a knowledge check? What's a pop quiz question they should be able to answer after listening to this podcast?
So pop quiz question is, what prerequisites must be met before you can attend the specialized child protection mediation training?
All right, very good. All right, does anyone have any closing words before we wrap up today?
I would say one thing, and I don't want to speak for the other two presenters, but I'm sure that it's true about them. If anybody would like to contact us or talk to us or have questions, I'm certainly willing to assist with that in any way possible.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know a lot of times child protection agencies, sometimes it's hard to see the benefit because it initially looks like it's going to take more time than what is already presented. And you think, how can I give any more time? And so if you do have those questions or thoughts, let me know, because I don't think that's the case when you really look at the cost benefit of child protection mediation.
All right, thank you. Well, that's a wrap today. So a huge thank you to Judge Denise McCauley, Heather Furnier, and Shelby Culley for this engaging and informative presentation about child protection mediation. And thank you all for the work that you do every day. And thank you to everyone out there listening, especially those of you who are working for justice. I hope you will join us for our next episode of Civility and Solutions. And until then, stay healthy.